it's almost more horrific to hear and see a picture in your head rather than see it on screen. Same with some of the other horror moments where you hear something moving in the background, but you have no idea what it looks like. The imagination of the listener will be able to fill in more than you could ever describe.
Found blood and some restraints.
Any bodies?
No, and not a lot of blood either. The other trail of footsteps...
All right, we're done, okay? Get back on the Blackhawk.
Another trail of footsteps. Stop at the pine.
I have a story now that's been heard in countries all around the world, and I couldn't have done that if I was writing a physical book and I'd have to worry about shipping costs. It's such a great way to get a story told to so many people. So I'm a huge proponent of this medium of storytelling, and I think it has an incredible growth potential.
The entire back wall of the diner shattered. Two hulking 12-foot giants ripped the corrugated tin off the roof, their red bodies and faces turned towards McAllen.
Nowadays we are so busy, and we're always driving here and going there and cleaning this and fixing that and working in the garage, and there's so many things that we do where we can't take our eyes away from what we're doing, but we still want to have something in the background to distract it from how tedious and boring it all is. And audio drama is perfect for that because the movie happens in your brain while you're, you know, changing your oil or fixing a tire or cleaning out the fridge and finding old salsa that's green and not meant to be. All this stuff can be mitigated with audio drama. It's wonderful.
I am a swordsman. I have been ever since I was old enough to pick up a blade. Ain't no way I'm facing any kind of destiny with this piece of crap.
A battle axe? That thing is
anyone cool. From any background, and it doesn't matter, they don't have to have certain qualifications in something, they don't have to know the right people. They can tell stories and they can collaborate on things and they can create without any boundaries whatsoever. And that for me is really, really important.
Practice. Make a show. Find one of the shows out here that's desperate for some sound engineer people and volunteer for a couple of episodes. There's a lot of us out here who are desperate for help. You know, and practice. Hone your skills. Figure out things. Learn from the people who have learned by doing it.
Yap Audio presents All Ears, a documentary celebrating the medium of modern audio drama. Here we pay tribute to the medium by bringing together some of the best writers, producers, and voice actors in the audio drama world to talk about their own experiences and journeys, as well as offering invaluable advice to those thinking of picking up the microphone and headphones themselves.
My name is Rich Matheson, and I produce Keeg's Quest, A Skyrim Adventure. I've known about audio drama since I was a little kid, but I only recently began producing it and enjoying it as a main medium of entertainment.
Hail! I am Enro of the House of Keeg. Hello? Anybody?
I discovered audio drama quite accidentally. My dad was a college professor. And he was playing the local college pirate radio station on his stereo. It was a school spirit thing, I guess. But they happened to be playing the Star Wars audio drama. And this blew my mind because, you know, I had just seen Star Wars a couple of years earlier. I was about maybe 10 years old at the time. And I heard Luke Skywalker's voice. And I went, oh my God, it's Luke Skywalker. And so I listened to this thing as much as I could. I mean, we were just in his office so we could pick up some files or whatever. And I think I tuned in to a couple of episodes. I really didn't comprehend what was going on. I just knew that I was really enjoying it. And I mean, I was a huge fan of Star Wars. I was a 10-year-old boy. I mean, what do you want? But I really liked that. And I mentioned it, I think, to my grandparents. And they said, well, that's, you know, how we were entertained when we were kids. I mean, they had stuff on the radio. They didn't have a screen to look at. They didn't have TV, but you just listened to it as a family. The whole family would gather around the radio and you would enjoy this adventure. And I said, wow, that's pretty cool. And so they bought me, you know, a Lone Ranger cassette and I believe a Shadow. And I listened to them and I had always been intrigued by history, how things were done in the past. And so I listened to them out of a kind of an academic interest, as academic as, you know, a 10-year-old could be. You know, and I said, oh, that's kind of cool. And I moved on because, you know, it was the Shadow and I was into Star Wars. And at some point I came across some Superman, a Spider-Man on vinyl. So if you could imagine this little 10, 11-year-old kid hunched over a record player with big old studio headphones on his little head in this little secluded corner of the room, like a mother dog nesting in the corner of the house, listening to these audio dramas. I really enjoyed that, and it was fun. But you know, overall, it was a fad, and I just kind of lost interest in it.
When I look back on it, I have been a fan of audio since I was very young. My name's Fiona Thrale, and I'm of the soon-to-be-launched Cooperantum Audio. One of my earliest memories is sort of age 3 or 4 dancing around to an audiobook recording of Beatrix Potter's tales. And it was such a fond memory, actually, that I ended up getting it for my little girl when she got to that age. And she now knows it just like I did, which is nice, or brainwashing. My dad was and is into comedy, particularly the old classics. So at the dinner table on Sundays, we used to have Hancock, either the Blood Donor or the Radio Ham, and Round the Horn, and also Not the 9 o'clock News. So I kind of grew up with, sort of 1960s audio comedy. And I still have a great love of all that very much.
My favorite show, well, it's difficult to choose favorites because I've listened to and enjoyed quite a few audio dramas in the last couple of years. I've only really been into it for a couple of years, modern audio drama. Leviathan and We're Alive, I think, have, from what I've heard, the highest production value of any modern audio drama. They do not skimp on quality at all. And that's really cool to me. Leviathan Chronicles is about a race of immortals that live in this underwater city. They've been hidden for 1,000 years underwater where the rest of the world doesn't know about them. And there's a power struggle and there's intrigue and different characters that you can relate to and enjoy and history and sci-fi, and it spans the globe. And it's just this humongous, awesome adventure. I love it. And actually, Leviathan is largely responsible for my interest in learning how to mix audio. There was in the first scene, I don't think I'm going to be spoiling anything here. In the first scene of the Leviathan Chronicles, episode 1, they're on a submarine and they're tracking this object underwater. And so the captain goes down to the sonar room and he's asking the sonar guy, you know, what's going on? And the sonar guy goes, well, sir, and he leans back in his chair. Now, the chair squeaked and it's a sound that did not need to be there. I mean, it was not required to tell the story. But just the simple act of hearing this guy lean back in his chair trying to formulate the words that he's going to tell his captain.
Why don't you brief the captain on your findings?
Well, about 2 hours ago, the Dakota passed over the Palau Trench.
That put me there. This is really happening. I'm in the room with these guys as they're having this conversation with my eyes closed. Because all the sounds are going on all around you and you hear this little chair squeak. And I said, oh my God, can I make someone in the world feel the way I feel right now? That's something that I want to learn to do. And so Leviathan was mind-blowing for me. Just that little tiny squeak. The rest of the story is awesome. But the little tiny details really made me fascinated with this whole medium. We're Alive, not similar at all, but similar in quality. It's indistinguishable from real life. I mean, these people are there and, you know, he's got a nylon bag and he's putting guns in it. You hear the guns going into the bag and the people walking around on the road.
You just don't get it, do you?
And they're talking to each other in what sounds like a real environment. A lot of my audio drama exposure has been, you know, a person in Texas recording his lines, a person in California recording his lines, a person in Great Britain recording his lines, and then a mixer mashes them all together. But these people are all in the same studio acting, and there is a very real chemistry that happens there. And that's a really cool thing. It's not something that I can do for my production, because I do all the voices myself. But it really adds something that is missing from a lot of other. And I know that it's not possible for a lot of people, but it really helps to have everyone in the studio and their audio quality and their acting. Both shows, the acting is phenomenal. So those two are really, really my favorites. And then We Are Not Alone is entirely different. It's basically a parody of 1950s sci-fi and all of the weird cultural things that go along with that. And it is hilarious. It's done in the UK, and it's a sketch comedy, kind of like Saturday Night Live, different little sketches with the same actors doing very different voices. And it's just, it makes me laugh. And it's very ironic that I don't seek out a lot of comedy. I do a comedy myself, but I don't go out of my way to seek out comedy, which is weird, I think. But I came across this thing and I said, oh, I'll give it a listen. And I loved it. I love this thing.
Camera strap that hadn't been present when the photo was taken. Further evidence that we are not alone.
Hello.
Well, how I got involved in audio drama, modern audio drama, I suppose. It was completely accidental, just like, you know, the Star Wars thing. I am a Trekkie. I'm a hardcore, dyed-in-the-wool, born-and-bred Trekkie. I think I was looking forward to the Star Trek movie in 2009, and I was just desperately craving anything Star Trek. So I did a web search on Star Trek, and I found this thing called Star Trek Lost Frontier. And it had characters and stuff, and I said, oh, well, this could be interesting. I didn't even know what it was. I didn't know that it was an audio drama when I downloaded it. And I opened the thing expecting to see some video, you know, recorded in someone's backyard. And all it was audio. And I went, oh, this is like that Star Wars thing that I listened to when I was a kid, or the Superman thing. And at the time, I was doing a lot of walking, and I was trying to get in shape. So I downloaded it to my MP3 player, and I listened to this thing as I walked. And I would walk for miles and miles and miles and not even realize that I was walking miles and miles because I was enjoying the story. And somewhere in the middle, you know, I was listening to the credits.
You're listening to Audio Theater in a Darker Shade.
This guy with his deep voice was doing the credits so-and-so as Captain Blah Blah Blah. And I went, oh my God, I would love to have this dude say my name. That's all I wanted, was for this dude to say my name in the credits of something.
Featured in the cast were Laura Post as Captain Delona and Compassion, Mark Kalita as Commander Mac.
I can remember the time very clearly when I discovered the audio drama world online. I'd just been teaching a lesson on War of the Worlds. It was really late at night, and it suddenly dawned on me, I wonder what Orson Welles would do nowadays. I wonder if there are any radio groups that are out there. And so I just Googled something like Modern Radio Group, and up popped Pendant. And I listened to a bit of Dixie Stenberg, and I was blown away. I thought it was amazing.
Umkit Industries proudly presents the Dixie Stenberg and Brassy Battalion Adventure Theatre, a Pendant production.
And I thought, oh, that's very nice that it's happening in America. And then I saw that you could get involved just with a microphone from anywhere. And that was an absolutely amazing moment. I actually reread it about 10 times because I was so excited by the idea of actually getting involved in this kind of thing. And that was the night I did. I then found the Voice Acting Alliance. I auditioned for Pendant. I auditioned for Kung Fu Action Theatre. And it was really the beginning of a whole new love in my life for audio.
So it was produced by a company called Darker Projects. And I went to their website and they said, join us and enter the magical world of audio drama. I said, yeah. So I filled out a little application. I said, you know what? I want to act and I want to write because those are the things I can do. And what I didn't realize at the time was that about 99% of the people who apply want to act and they want to write. But no one wants to mix because nobody knows what mixing is. I didn't realize. So, you know, I applied for these roles. And I said, oh, I can play that role. And I would play the role. And I never got a part. And it was for a number of reasons that I didn't discover until later. I had horrible audio quality. I was recording into a Logitech headset mic that you use for, like, Call of Duty or something. My acting was atrocious. I mean, I sounded like I was reading off of a page, which, you know, you don't hear that. You say, oh my god, my voice sounds wonderful, and you send it off thinking you're getting it a part. No, you sound like you're reading off a page, and that's bad. I never realized that. And the third and most important reason was there weren't any parts to give out because they had a backlog of, 20 scripts that were all acted and recorded. They just needed someone to mix them. And they had a little handful of people who were mixing things in their spare time. And, they needed mixers more than anything else. So I was very, almost defiant. I said, you know what? I am going to be involved in this company and I'm going to get my name spoken by that deep voice guy. And so, sure, fine, whatever, I'll mix. And so I learned to mix. And it was, I couldn't figure it out. And I had a couple people that helped me a lot learning the very basics of it. And then I started working at it. And that's the only way to learn is to just work at it. And they say that and it's frustrating and you don't want to hear that. You want it handed to you on a silver platter and you really do have to just play with it. But having advice does help. So my first published audio drama was a 2-minute scene. And it took me 2 months to produce to my satisfaction. And then it took another couple weeks after that to refine it so that it was to their satisfaction. Because, they have, their name writing on this thing. And they say, you have to fix this. And that constructive criticism was invaluable. I mean, it really, really was helpful.
At Pendant Audio, they have a director's training program. So Jeffrey Bridges there kindly gave me a course in mixing. And then he gave me a chance to direct a show or mix a show. Him teaching me mixing and Rob Patterson of Kung Fu Action Theatre encouraging and inspiring on the writing side. That's what eventually came together to give me confidence to do Red Sands Investigations, which I wrote and mixed for Pendant Audio. To explain, when I came to mixing, I had no technical knowledge at all whatsoever. In fact, something that was worrying me for the whole time I was doing it was I was worrying about sending the files because I had no idea how I could fit them into an email because I'd never even worked out how to send large files. So when I first saw the mixing screen, it was like the screen that comes up in some sci-fi underwater thriller. It was really scary, but the excitement of laying lines down and hearing a scene come to life was wonderful. I still wouldn't really count myself as a mixer because there are some amazing mixers out there, but it is a very, very satisfying thing.
I'm even working on an email basis with the guy with the voice who now runs the place. So that's really cool. And so, 2 minutes and boom, I was published and yay. So I started mixing and more importantly, I started listening, and that's when you become a mixer, sometimes maybe not, but at least in my case, when I started mixing, I started listening. I listened to a lot of other audio dramas, trying to pick up tips and tricks. I learned what I was doing wrong with my acting. I heard, lines coming in with a fan in the background or a dog barking in the background or this echoey stuff that no amount of digital mixing and fixing and tweaking can fix. I mean, the source of the audio has to be as clean as possible. I didn't realize that. And little things. I would be in, a gas station, and I would just close my eyes and listen to this. Oh, you can hear, the pump clanking in the background, or you can hear this, or you can hear the... If you're creating an environment for audio, you have to incorporate all these things. You have to create this picture in your mind and say, okay, there are going to be birds there. We're near the water, so we might want to hear a motorboat in the distance. And little tiny things like that chair squeak, little things that people wouldn't necessarily expect to find there, but they can see how they would be there. And those little surprises every now and then really drive home that you're in this environment and doing these things.
This is Jack Kincaid. I'm a writer. I'm a voice actor. I'm the producer of a sci-fi audio drama series called Edict Zero FIS. I learned a long time ago that the more people that you involve in a project, the more complicated the whole thing gets. Unless you're paying people or you have really good blackmail material. You have to expect to do a lot yourself
I'm aware that Agent Garrett prefers to work alone and has a history of not working well with others, to put it mildly.
And otherwise, you need to find a few good people that you can trust and who you know will do a good job. That's all you need. It's necessary to make the voices distinct.
Oh, yes, indeed, sir. They are never the same, sir.
And to make them contrast in pitch and rhythm and feel, especially when you're playing multiples, and especially if you're talking to yourself.
I'm the man in your elevator, sir.
The dark blue Enterprise with the East Island plates. It'll respond when you clicky-clicky this.
I'm sorry to disturb you, miss, but I got the impression that you and the man on the seat next to you were together.
I only hope that I'm worthy to have received it.
You're presuming hope correct. You have the ability to go far here. You also have impeccable timing.
Yes, agreed.
You don't wait too long before you do that. You do it as soon as you can, and you didn't get this from me, you hear?
No! Stop that! That's madness. But I know, soldier, and the captain knows what time it is.
It's pan time. I'm the man who's telling you to leave, sir. The pan.
My name is Casey Whalen, and I'm the writer, director, and producer of We're Alive. We're Alive is a post-apocalyptic audio drama series. Right now, we have just finished our third season and have about 36 hours of content so far. And we've been very successful in, I think, what we've been able to do. And we started in 2009, and it got a little bit of a slow start, but now we're up to about 14 million downloads. And last year, we were also nominated for Best Audio Drama by the Audies. And this year, we were nominated, and we actually got Best of iTunes in the Arts category for 2012.
We're Alive, a story of survival. Chapter 1.
Their bodies were littered with scars and bruises, and their eyes were glazed over. The news made it sound like these were people gone mad, but the way they moved made me think that these may not be people at all.
Those were not rioters. They attacked a guy who was honking at me on the freeway.
They weren't attacking him. They were eating him.
They were what?
I wasn't far behind Michael. They were taking big chunks and shoving them in their mouths.
What? Why would they were like animals, and they sure as hell weren't like us anymore. Not with those eyes.
Then what were they?
So I think mainly we've done pretty well to bring attention to this this audio format. It's been a lot of development along the way. We started out pretty small. Our numbers were very, very small. I mean, if I look at the first couple months, if not three quarters of a year in 2009, we were barely scraping by 50 downloads, 60 downloads a day. It was, and a lot of those times were people who knew us. They were friends and family. And it took a while for the program really to launch and take new, take flight. It's been a learning curve the entire time. My background for writing and doing all the stuff was all film-based. So I was using, most of my techniques were visual-based, and it kind of had to relearn how to write for strictly audio format. It's like, oh, okay, how can you tell something rather than, show something that the film has? And there's a lot of things that have been borrowed that I've taken from film, in terms of the writing style and also the formats of the scripts and things like that. And I think it's just, done nothing but contribute to the overall, simplification of kind of what we do.
I take influence from TV shows and movies a bit more now for this structurally than I do from books. And that's been a transitional process. If you want the listener to imagine something specific, you have to communicate it another way, such as with sound effects or through dialogue. Characters have to verbalize more, as there's no internal dialogue. I considered adding that at times with that distinct echo effect. I'm sure there's a term for it, but it escapes me right now. I decided against it. All right, so the point is, so maybe a real person wouldn't say this or that in real life or declare what they're doing. But like any other entertainment form, you adapt to what the form offers. You play on its strengths. You circumvent the weaknesses, if we want to call them weaknesses. You do it in a way that people will barely notice.
Quality, sound quality, acting quality, all of these things are the number one priority to be taken seriously. I mean, it's not enough to just get the story out there by any means necessary. It's kind of like on like cooking shows. If you watch, like, the cooking competitions where you have these master chefs creating these dishes and the judges judge them, it could be the best tasting thing on the planet. It could just have this wonderful flavor. But if it looks horrible, if it looks like a pile of whatever, they're going to vote you out because it looks like crap, basically. And so the packaging matters. The sound quality, the acting quality, all of these things matter a lot more than the story itself. The story can be a wonderful, wonderful story. But if it sounds bad, if there are noises distracting from the telling of the story, the whole story will suffer. So it's really worth trying to do it as right as possible and always learning new things and trying new tricks that you hear.
Also, at least in my opinion, you can hang out a little more with the characters. In fact, you often need to, because there is no visual. I think it's best to let them settle in a lot of the time, unless you're in a climax sequence that needs to have oomph, that needs to have a lot of momentum. But in that case, you've already established who's where and what's going on. I like hanging out with the characters, probably too much. But, you know, even their mundane exchanges interest me. The way that mundane exchanges between people interest me. That interplay between their personalities. I'm going to give one example here. In the case of Agent Nick Garrett, particularly in Season 1, I felt that it was necessary to get a real feel for why he has such trouble working with others. You might hang out with him for a scene while he's going off on some digression. And if you're not taken in by him, you know, if you're not enjoying the character, you might roll your eyes if you don't identify with him. You may feel annoyed at his behavior or how he readily assumes the ignorance of everybody else on just about any subject, or at least those subjects that he's confident in. You're supposed to feel that way.
When I was a kid, I imagined a starship version of Noah's Ark transporting an enormous zoo across the galaxy.
You tried to get rid of me.
I suppose that's much more visually interesting than tubes of DNA and banks of tissue in cold storage. I wonder, though, why did we bring so many of them back to life?
Do you seriously think you can avoid what I have to say by refusing to acknowledge that I'm talking to you? I know you can hear me.
If you already know I can hear you, then why is it necessary for me to acknowledge it? I'm sure you'll figure it out. Let's go. Are you coming?
I am beginning to understand.
Now you understand through first-hand experience. It has been demonstrated, shown. Without that stuff in there, you may say, hey, I don't get why people don't like to work with him. He's all right. So, in that case, I take the risk of the listener confusing the character with the author and feeling irritated with him. Or me. Whoever. Ah, well. You win some, you lose some. What you gonna do? So bottom line is, you have only dialogue, sound effects, and music as a conduit for the story. I make some of my own, yes. If we're talking background ambiences such as cars or birds or noisy bugs at night ambiences, stuff like that, sometimes it's just as simple as setting up a mic and recording it. I mean, sounds are all around us to be captured. I don't have a mobile rig, but I do. I have a lot of microphone cord. I make use of it when I'm in that mode. Other sounds, such as footsteps, movements, creaking, squeaky chairs, and the like. Again, it's just a matter of setting the mic in the right place and making noise with stuff. I don't use anything fancy. Far from it. I make the most out of a little. Sometimes simpler is better. I do create a lot of sound effects, or I know how to go about creating certain sound effects, simply from having experimented so much with sound. All kinds of sound effects, music, engines, environmental noise, just about anything you can think of.
Everybody hold on for a minute while we get the computers and the registers back.
What's going on? Look how the floor caved in.
I reverse them. I'll run them through filters. I'll slow them down. Sometimes I'll slow them way, way down. Speeding them up, bending the pitch, mechanizing them, combining them with other sounds. I like to tinker when I have time. And if I've created a certain effect before by doing something, I'll usually remember how I did it if I find that's what I need at any given time. For some electronics effects, like the computer soundscapes, I will start off with nothing but a tone, just an unending, unbroken tone, and I will work from there, chop it up, I'll mess with it. I am like a child.
This is Christoph Laputka, author and creator of the Leviathan Chronicles.
The Leviathan Chronicles. An audio adventure.
We started the Leviathan Chronicles as an audio drama several years ago, and the goal was really to see how far we could push the genre. At the time when we started, I didn't know what an audio drama was. I was listening to some podcasts by Scott Sigler and J.C. Hutchins and Merle Lafferty that were, for lack of a better term, patio books, where a lot of authors were using podcasting as a medium to promote their written works. And I was captivated by some of these stories, but while I was listening to them, I kept thinking, like, God, that was a great fight scene. Why aren't there effects there? Or when that plane goes by, there could be some great music, or we should be adding more actors reading the lines. And I was thinking this without really understanding what the genre was.
Will internet audio drama become massively popular? I'm really torn on this one, because part of me really wants those people out there now who are making some incredible drama completely free in their free time. I would love them to be financially compensated for what they're doing, because then they could give up their day jobs and they could focus on what they obviously are very talented at. And then we'd have more audio drama, which would be great. But on the other hand, and this is where I feel really strongly, at the moment, all you need to make audio drama is a computer with access to the internet, a microphone, and the time and space and wellness, I guess, to tell your story. And that's all you need. And so that immediately gives access to so many people. A lot of people who don't actually know about it quite yet, but in the future they might, and that'd be brilliant. And those people can then tell their stories and do things that could be quite niche, because there are no constraints at all. There's no constraints with the budgets. There's no constraints in the logistics of trying to get everyone together to do something. And there's no pressure about being commercial at all. So people can just let rip with their imaginations and do anything whatsoever and tell whatever stories they want to.
This is Julie Hoverson. I'm the producer of 19 Nocturne Boulevard, Fatal Girl, Bingo the Birthday Clown, The Dead Eye Kid, etc., etc. Weality Productions is the parent company name.
How did you get those?
Never mind that. The email proves I do have them.
It would ruin me if those got out, and you know it!
Then I guess you better do what is asked of you, Miss Takamura. Right.
It's just the money, right? You don't want anything else?
I'll let you know if I think of anything. Don't worry, you'll be hearing from me again.
Publishing by yourself, you're left up to your own devices as far as quality goes and people you trust. It's a good thing and it's a bad thing. It means there's some fabulously bizarre stuff out here, you know, whether it's Keek's Quest or Edict Zero. There is some oddball stuff out here because nobody's saying, don't do that. We don't want to pay for it.
And that's where I feel it's ever so important, because our whole culture is made up of the stories we tell and the stories we choose to tell and who tells them. And very often it tends to be the powerful people in society who get to choose who tells what and whatever. But this is one of those opportunities for the first time now with the internet, not just with audio drama, but also with ebooks, where anyone from any background, and it doesn't matter, they don't have to have certain qualifications in something, they don't have to know the right people or be the correct kind of person to do something. They can tell stories and they can collaborate on things and they can create without any boundaries whatsoever. And that for me is really, really important. So if part of audio drama if it did become massively popular, that would be brilliant. But I'd hate to see it close down, you know, if their fees sprang up for distributing your stories and that kind of thing.
At the time, I had been writing a science fiction story about immortality. That was the basis for the Leviathan Chronicles. And I knew that I wanted to do something different with it and tell the story in a more visceral way. And I guess I had the benefit of ignorance, because as I've come to learn, I broke one of the cardinal rules of audio drama, which was to use a narrator. And I just didn't see the story working any other way, where we had a combination of a narrator and actors telling a story and of course all the music and the sound effects. And I approached a audio production company in New York called Silver Sound to really kind of help me with this project and to say, listen, I'll provide the dialogue. I need someone to help me with the effects and with all the music and to make the story really come alive. And we started it just thinking, let's just do a couple episodes. Let's spend as much time as we want and just see how good we can make something sound. And after a couple episodes of just kind of experimenting, and it took us several months, we're all so happy with what we created that we wanted to keep going with it and to keep telling more stories in this incredible way.
I would rather have the audience. I would rather have the product than have the money. See, I would rather have the fans. I'd rather have the following. I'd rather have, you know, the meager feedback we get of 1 in 1,000 people actually writing to say kudos or something. And that's really what makes it all worth it. And the thing is, with podcasting, it is incredibly simple to do. It takes time and there's a learning curve. But once you get that, once you master the software and are comfortable with it, it's easy. Teaching my friend Kim, who does Warp Space now, she goes, okay, I've got a script writing. I'm writing a script. You got to teach me, you know, teach me how to do this. And I was like, that is so awesome, because there's somebody who is what I would consider to be a writer. But the technicalities of it are still very simple. I mean, you have some sound, you mix the sound, you post the sound somewhere. Voila! It is not hard to do this at a very, very cheap level.
When I started Leviathan, I was still working within the paradigm of authors that wanted to use podcasting to promote their books. So I thought this was the way I was going to become a writer. I was going to podcast this work. And I started writing Leviathan kind of as I would write a novel, but it became clear to me very quickly that I'm really writing a screenplay. I'm not writing a novel. And now it's really changed, where my dream, my hope is to be a producer of audio drama, not necessarily to be a published in a bookstore author. My joy and my creative fulfillment comes out of telling the stories through this medium, which I think is really great, because it's so accessible. You have both the benefit of your imagination, where you can tell these stories that would be just too expensive or too difficult to do in a film medium.
For all the shows in my queue, I've had over 500,000 downloads, which is really, really cool. And it keeps going up. I mean, it's nothing on the huge scale of some of the other shows like We're Alive, but in addition to being extremely professional, very, very regular and reliable, which is huge, people. But the big thing is, there's no reason not to try. And that this may sound silly or whatever, but it's really easy to do, and it's good practice. If what you want to do is polish your skills so you can get a real, real, real job, practice. Make a show. Do somebody's audio book on a cassette. Find one of the shows out here that's desperate for some sound engineer people and volunteer for a couple of episodes. There's a lot of us out here who are desperate for help. You know, and practice, hone your skills, figure out things, learn from the people who have learned by doing it. The quality isn't going to be the tool. I mean, you may be able to have enhanced quality if you had more tools, but the quality is going to be in the source material, the writing, the acting, the recording, the putting together, the mixing. You know, that's where the real quality comes from, not from the software you use or even from your hardware. I mean, you can use an average mic and get better sound than using a really super good mic. And the reason why is, if you have a really super good mic and you don't have a really super good soundproof room to go with it, it's actually a curse.
But more importantly, it's how fantastically deliverable these stories are. You know, they're these smaller files. Anybody can listen to them in their car when they're working out. They go into everybody's phones, and you can distribute it so well. I have a story now that's been heard in countries all around the world, and I couldn't have done that if I was writing a physical book and I'd have to worry about shipping costs. It's such a great way
to get a story told to so many people. So I'm a huge proponent of this medium of storytelling. And I think it has an incredible growth potential because I've never had the experience of playing anybody, We're Alive or Children of the Gods or even Leviathan Chronicles, and have somebody not respond positively. Everyone's like, wow, I didn't know this existed, or wow, I didn't know this was available. And the only impediment that people have is kind of understanding where to get it and the download process. So I think as more and more people get a little bit more tech savvy, and as the awareness grows of this incredible renaissance that's happening in audio drama and podcasting, more and more people I think are going to get drawn to it because it's such a great medium. There's so many creative voices out there right now, and it's really, really exciting.
At the moment, for example, in the audio community, we've got a lot of women involved who aren't always that represented in some other art forms. And we've also got people with disabilities who find this more accessible than, say, theatre. And that's a wonderful thing. At the moment, it's just a magical time. And I think it's really, really enriching for everybody because of that. Because there are audio dramas out there that are really niche. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
In terms of which I would rather prefer, if I'd rather be more, you know, have the mainstream feel to it or on the underground community, it's a mixture of both because with the underground community that we have now, we have a pretty large audience that's growing. And like on our forums, I think we have like 3,500 people who like get on there and talk about the show and they have theories and things like that. It you know, the numbers vary up and down depending on if, oh, it's an interesting episode, more people going on, that kind of thing. And I like that. I like the idea of you know, it being, you can identify the people that you're talking with on the forums and you know a little bit about them and their posts and things like that. So I think that's a benefit. I think the communications of the fans on the forums and things like that benefit from an underground experience. But I, as a producer, I'd like to have that mainstream massive goal of getting a lot of people listen to it. Obviously, if all of a sudden you get a lot more listeners and more people are tuning into your show, you could possibly expand it to multiple shows, make, you know, a real business model out of it rather than, you know, something that's very singular. But at the same time, you don't want to spread yourself too thin and have, you know, produce the best things that you can rather than two things that are just okay. Make one great, less better than two good.
When I write and when we produce Leviathan Chronicles, we actually approach it in more of a cinematic way. We try and be the summer blockbuster of audio dramas by trying to find ways to push the boundaries. Like, what would a kung fu fight sound like? What would whales swimming underwater be like? What is it like to be in a posh party in London or be in the slums of Mumbai? And that really came out of a desire to want to transport the listener, not just to tell a story, but take them to different locations, different places using sound, and really make the storyline as evocative as possible, to not just take you on a ride, but also take you on a travel journey, really. And I think in order to do that, one of the things that we try very hard to do in the Leviathan Chronicles is to make things sound realistic. And I think there's some other audio dramas that do this so well, like We're Alive by Casey Whalen, how they make the dialogue sound natural. And we spend an incredible amount of time in Leviathan really micro-editing the timing of people's dialogue. Because in real life, people talk over each other. They stutter, they have pauses, conversations overlap. And in a lot of the older audio dramas, they sounded too much like stage shows where one person presented to the audience and the other person responded back way. And they didn't sound like they were, it didn't sound like you had a mic eavesdropping on two people having a natural conversation. I think We're Alive does that so incredibly well, where all the dialogue sounds so natural. And I really admire the way that they record in that they have all their actors in one place on one set at the same time. And I think that creates really an amazing amount of chemistry. We definitely look up to those guys and admire the way that they have such great chemistry between their actors and such great, those little casual interactions. Just, I think, really make the storyline that much more believable.
Yeah, not if you want to search from the sky, we're not. Now just sit tight. Play with your little Game Boy thing.
Game Boy? How old are you? And it ran out of batteries.
Well, and it's your fault.
My background with audio drama is a little bit different than I think most people. I was not really raised in the audio drama world, if that makes sense. Like, I listened to a couple here and there, but I was not really a huge addict. I didn't really draw to that medium, only because I I didn't like some of the gimmicks that were done. I didn't really like a lot of the styles of acting I wasn't a big fan of. I thought it was more radio style rather than what I've gotten used to for, you know, performances I've seen on film. I started in doing visuals, doing short films, doing documentaries, feature-length documentaries and things like that. So I've been used to a lot of the, you know, showing rather than telling. And so that was kind of my background before I ever even experienced some of that. And weirdly enough, I got a job at a audiobook store. I believe I was like 16 or, yeah, around 16. And I actually got cast in an audio drama. It was called Full Court Press by Patrick Redden, and it was through Tsunami Radio, which I found out is actually still producing stuff today. I contacted them and said, hey, this is weird that I, you know, got to start with you guys, and this is where I'm going now, and it's something that I did not expect at the time. So that was my first experience. I was actually an actor on the show. I guess I had a little bit of a younger voice at that time, and I was like playing an innocent kid. And I remember listening back on that, and like I really loved what he did with the sound design. And it was pretty simple. It was like the streets and the basketball was going in the background. I just felt like, oh wow, this is so neat. Like it's you're basically painting a picture in somebody's head, and this is cool. It's neat. And I didn't really think of much of it at the time. And I moved on, and I continued going to college. I also have a military background, so I spent time in the military. And I did even with that, was all visual, like news reporting stuff and broadcast journalism. So I never really returned to any radio or audio stuff until, I'd say, my senior thesis in college. I was working on an animated film, and it was strictly the main portion of it was animated. And what I did for that was I brought in actors and cast them, and I had them read in, you could kind of say it's like a table read, where I gathered everyone around and up in a circle and put microphones in front of them and had them engage each other. And they were performing what was going to be animated later with just their voices. And I was going through and I was like, wow, this is really neat, because even as we were doing like the voice cuts and things like that at just for the animation portion, it was like, wow, you can really do anything with this. I mean, it's very versatile. I'm not having to deal with, because on film shoots, there's a lot of setup. I was on a set just yesterday, and I mean, it took 2.5 hours just for them to set up before the first shot was out. And it's like, wow, it's in the crews are like, you know, 25, 30 people minimum to get some of the stuff done. And it's like, wow, I don't have to do nearly as much work, and yet my yield is great. This is a nice opportunity to get, you know, really tell a story in something that's not as complicated as, say, a film shoot. And I, at the time, I didn't really draw a lot from it in like a practical sense. And I said, okay, that's fine. Move on. We'll maybe work on another visual project here and there. And I kind of got a little disheartened by the idea of short films, because short films, I mean, like they're 15 minutes long on average. They're pretty short. They'll get some of them, if they're really good, will get a lot of YouTube hits. But seeing all my friends around me make this stuff, and some of them would make really great stuff that they'd work like 9-10 months, almost a year, if not more, on. And they didn't really get them anywhere. It's a great little YouTube clip that's a lot of hits, great, and people move on. And I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to find a way to make, you know, commercial success with making a story, I can't really use the 15-minute short film model. I mean, you can make a trailer, you can do all this stuff, but really the way that you're going to be able to sell yourself and your story is through people and like fan participation and getting people really behind it. Because, I mean, let's face it, all the movies nowadays they're not made by people who are, you know, willing to take risks. They're using recycled stories of stuff that we've seen before, Total Recall, refabbed that story. I mean, there's no real original ideas done anymore. It's all just the same thing. And so I said, oh, okay, well, this is, if I establish myself in something that's a long form, rather than these little short 15-minute clips, you might be able to, you know, turn this into something more lucrative, like start as an option here and then move on further. At the time, I had been listening to a lot of different podcasts. My fiance introduced me to Frosty, Heidi, and Frank, which was a radio show where they, you know, just talking on the air, and then they would, you know, put out the podcast form of it later. And also introduced me to the Harry Potter Jim Dale series, Book on Tape. And I'm like, this is a really good medium to get something out there. And the podcast form was great because it was independently produced and gave the listener the opportunity to go directly to the content provider and get it. And it's there on their mobile device, and it's good to go. I was like, wow, there's the delivery format. Here's the concept of how you arrange it. And the only thing that was lacking was, you know, the story and also, you know, the package of what I was going to tell. And I came up with this idea when I was overseas. I was stationed in Iraq as a broadcast engineer, and there was a hotel there. For security reasons, I'll just ignore the actual title of it. But what they did was they secured the bottom floor, and then every floor above that would be then secure because, you know, no one's infiltration through a hotel through the upper windows is, you know, it's not really a feasible option. So it's like, oh, okay, cool. Well, that would work great in a zombie apocalypse. You secure the bottom floor, and then all the floors above there would be fine. So that gave the idea of the tower. And the tower was kind of a staple for the story. And it just kind of like, I sat down one night in bed and just outlined and just came up with different characters and storylines. And I was like, wow, there's a lot here I could work with because I love the idea of a survival story. And then being able to tell it through audio is like, well, I've done horror films before. I've done horror shorts and things like that. And I when I did those, I realized you could do anything with sound. You can get a lot of mileage about, you know, if you can hear something but not see it, it's 10 times more scary. Like it increases the amount of the fear factor to it. So I said, oh, okay, this is great. How can I, you know, how do I make this work? How do I got the characters, I got the story. And to be honest, when I started out, I was like, okay, well, there are no survival stories like this on television. I mean, as much as people were like, oh, Walking Dead's there now, it wasn't really there in 2009 when we started going through and doing all this plot stuff. It didn't exist. It hadn't made the bridge to television. So I'm like, oh, okay, what we can do is maybe we'll start in a podcast form. We'll start telling the story here. We'll get people involved. People will see that this is a great story. And then we'll go over to television. And now here we are 4 years later. I mean, the show is getting a lot more mainstream. People seem to like it more in an audio drama format than if it would be on television. Some people come back and say, you know, I'd love, you know, love the visual aspect of it. If you could make some adaptations and we'd like a book for this and blah, blah, blah. And it's nice to see that it's all about the story, not so much about the delivery content. As much as I'd like to say we've, you know, really pushed the boundaries of the format, It all winds down to good characters, good story, and something that people can rally behind. And I think definitely doing this medium has been able to give us that, you know, push to really get people connected with our story and what's going on. And I think that's where our success lies.
One of the first audio dramas I did listen to before I really knew what an audio drama was Children of the Gods. And this was a kind of a more of a space fantasy story about an alien invasion. And I was listening to it, and that's kind of, I think, where one of the ways that the light bulb went off when I heard them using, you know, having space battles and having the effects of what it's like to be in a spaceship and the hums and the ambient drones. And I was just really impressed by, you know, you really felt like you were in space, and there seemed to be a level of production that a lot of the base audio books didn't have.
A war we cannot lose, an enemy we cannot defeat, a destiny we will not escape. Children of the Gods.
So in terms of the format of the audio drama, We're Alive has got to do a lot of neat experimentation, kind of like pushing the boundaries of what's there. And one of the things I like to do is play on the strengths of what audio only is. For instance, there's several segments of We're Alive that just have sound effects, almost zero to no talking. And I think that's great because doing a full sound design in post-production allows us to kind of design something that might be even more horrific or more, you know, like, oh, what's going to happen, rather than something you could see visually. There's a scene in particular that there's a whole bunch of scenes that actually I don't think would be possible to do if We're Alive was actually to go onto film. I don't think it would be. I think it'd be more inappropriate. There's actually a scene that's very high tension where a guy tries to force himself onto a girl, and it's like it's almost more horrific to hear and see a picture in your head rather than see it on screen.
On the bed.
What?
You heard me. Do it. Fine.
No.
I said to be quiet, didn't I?
Same with some of the other horror moments where you hear something moving in the background, but you have no idea what it looks like. Part of the reason why we do things like that, and especially with, like, we don't really go into too much description of our characters and also some of the things that they see, because I feel that the imagination of the listener will be able to fill in more than you could ever describe. And everyone has their own picture in their head of what they see when they hear a voice anyway. And I think if you were to give them too much information for that, it maybe distorts what they see. And so I'm behind the idea of saying, oh, okay, well, even the horrific parts give you just a little and the mind will fill in the rest. And I think that's one of the really cool things about audio drama is you're giving a nice fair amount of it's like splits the medium between film and book. In a book format, you don't really, you know, you give the person as much information as you can for them to like picture the voice and the people in their head. Film, you fill in all the blanks, where audio drama is here you get the voice of the person, you get a little bit of the personality and some of their tells and things like that. So it's a nice in between, but they still get to make up a lot of it in their head, and I think that's, you know, part of the power of this medium.
Hurry, get on board.
Probably what I would leave if I was to say to anybody who wants to go into this field is the most important thing about all of this is character, story, and that's pretty much it. If you have one of the most interesting story pieces with great characters, it's not going to matter as much your quality. I mean, everything mounts up to, you know, it's a big building block, but if you have these things, people are going to excuse some of the shortcomings. Like, there's some stories that I've listened to that I don't think are the best produced. It sounds like somebody's recording it in their room, or they're recording it in their car. Or, you know, the production values may not be that high, but the thing is, the actors and performing together in that space, and really, you know, you believe it, and you can get into the story. That's what's important. That's the stuff that really can sell. What this is. And a good story is worth telling. And if it has a few technical shortcomings, people are still going to follow you. It's the ones that are, you know, if you're technically great, but have no characters or story, that's not going to make up the difference. That's how we are as, you know, people who want to hear these oral histories of and stories is we want to hear something interesting. We want to hear interesting characters that we can identify with, and not the stereotypical chopping block of what people think are characters rather than just normal people.
It's simple. It's so simple that it would seem to go without saying. If you don't believe, they won't believe.
With thanks to Julie Hovison, Jack Kincaid, Christoph Laputka, Rich Matheson, Fiona Thrale, and Casey Wayland. The clips heard in this documentary were from The Leviathan Chronicles, We're Alive, Keeg's Quest, Fatal Girl, Edict Zero FIS, Darker Projects The Section 31 Files, Dixie Stenberg, We Are Not Alone, and Children of the Gods. The music was by Tom Cusick. All Ears is a Yap Audio production, produced by Robert Cudmore and Matthew McLean. For more information, please visit our website at yapaudio.co.uk, and you can get in touch via Twitter at Yap Audio, or by emailing info@yapaudio.co.uk.